Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Right, let's go.
Typical, disgusting display.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and JC.
Typical, disgusting, disgusting display.
And it starts right now.
Oh, welcome back to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing.
And here we go. Attempt number two.
Numero dos.
You instantly froze when we started this morning, and all I could think of was someone jizzing in their tuxedo pants on their wedding night.
First joke of the day.
Come here.
That was a no. Sorry, I was saving my virginity for this, so now I can't do anything.
I don't know what to do. I rubbed up against a bridesmaid and I lost it. Sorry.
You think the rental place is going to charge us extra?
Get the seltzer. I'll start rubbing it on the inside. Get the seltzer and a napkin.
Wasn't there a reality show of couples that had never kissed and then they got married and
yes.
Then they show the first kiss and it's
it was just so disgusting. It was like, it was like in those alien movies when they're trying to implant their brain in another person. Like that's what the kisses look like. Yeah. I'm going to impregnate you with my alien seed via my tongue.
Through your mouth, yes.
We froze when we first started here and I was in the middle of saying that I have a head cold.
Right.
I have a head cold. So
you got COVID? Or do you not even bother testing anymore?
This is not COVID. This is not COVID.
This is just a head
confirmed.
Cold.
But as you know, this you start messing around with the alchemy of this nose, it's trouble.
Yeah, well,
it's trouble.
If one of my ears is blocked, I'm just ready to kill myself.
I know.
That's the worst.
It's so true. Like and Goldie, we've had this conversation before. It's like the pack animal in the wild who all of a sudden there's a thorn in their hoof and then they're left behind and eaten by predators. It's like if one thing goes wrong, my very existence is thrown into question.
Yeah.
Here we are, face to face, three silver spoons. Goldie, we had a little conversation yesterday and something caught our eye that's back in the news, and it was something we talked about, I don't know, I want to say almost a year ago, this Jonah Hill thing.
I think it was about 6 months ago, but
oh, yeah.
Let's not quibble over time.
I have a head cold, so I don't know.
I could just say what I think the story is.
Yeah, please.
Is
that, we'll lay out what happened first.
Well, and we talked about the documentary Stutz on Netflix, which was about Jonah Hill and his therapist.
Yes,
and
it was really about Jonah Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we all enjoyed it to different ways, to different degrees.
Yes.
I thought it was a good...
Agreed.
I put it in the top 40% of our podcasts.
Safely.
It's not canon, but on the other hand, no one's mad about it.
Right.
Yeah. It's not approaching Mulaney or Matt Rice.
Right.
But it's up there.
No. I'm trying to think of who we can insult. Who we can't see anymore.
Oh, we got to go
compare it to.
We got
to
go with Lou Schneider. He's our go-to whipping boy. We love Lou.
Somewhere between a Schneider and a Scully. It's in there somewhere.
It's in there somewhere.
Schneider, Stutz, Scully. No, I put them all on the same plane. Anyway, so then Jonah Hill's ex-girlfriend released a bunch of his text messages 2 days ago and sort of saying he's a toxic person. I don't remember
like
the exact
controlling,
emotionally abusive, controlling.
Controlling that he had said he had laid out his boundaries, but his boundaries didn't seem to involve him at all. It all seemed like stuff that she did that he no longer wanted her to do, like wear a bikini on Instagram, show pictures of herself surfing.
She's a surfer. She's a pro surfer.
Yeah.
And that's how they first met. He like reached out to her from her DMs. One of her photos of her surfing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That adds a layer.
Yeah. And have lunch with her toxic old surf friends or.
Yeah.
So, you know, first of all, God forbid my text to my wife get out, because it's like how many times can a human being ask another human being to buy Cheez-Its? It's like it's enough. Like you're harassing this
controlling.
Go get the Cheez-Its yourself, you lazy fuck.
Controlling. He's snack controlling me.
But so and God only knows what you're writing to your wife. I suspect JC's text to Stu are within bounds.
Yeah. I don't know.
Those could be released to the public, I think.
Yeah. Catch me on a bad day, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, but so he, you know, look, it's never great when something that was intended to be private correspondence gets released. Right. But then, Alec, you kind of had an angle that it sort of invalidated the work that we had done about Stutz.
Yes.
What's that?
Yeah, well, no, Jonah is wrecking poor Stutz. Like Stutz, as we know from the documentary, is suffering from MS.
Parkinson's.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
And it's really starting to, you know, kind of take him over and he's slowing down. And I think that was part of the impetus for making the documentary. It's like, let's get him while he's still pretty healthy. But Jonah Hill is now fucking up Stutz's legacy. Like it's making Stutz seem, because Jonah Hill's language in these texts was clearly parroting like therapy speak. So it seemed clear that Stutz had said to him, like, well, you need to set clear boundaries, you know, and then Jonah Hill took that and sprinted with with, like, you know, the texts that are all one-sided. It's like 30 texts, no response.
Right.
So I think Jonah's kind of fucking with Stutz here.
Well,
interesting.
So I read someone on Twitter said this, and I thought this was pretty incisive. They said that boundaries are something you set for yourself, not that you impose on other people.
Perfectly said.
Oh, yes.
So meaning like I can say my boundary is, you know, I don't want to be with someone who has swimsuit pictures on Instagram, but I can't really say that it's a boundary in the relationship because it's not. Right. So I think there's a nuance where you say he should be clear in what he can tolerate and can't tolerate. Totally. But then when you see what those things are, it's pretty abhorrent. Yes. So from a therapist perspective, if someone came in and said they planned to do this, it seems like you would try to say, hey, I applaud you for understanding there's you and them, and then there's stuff in between and lines. But those really shouldn't be the ones you're drawing, right? But if you only have an hour with a person and you get paid the same $300 either way, wouldn't you just kind of say like, hey, you know, try it and see how it goes?
Because
maybe it'll work. I don't know. Maybe like he sends that text and she goes, I'll never wear a bathing suit again. I'm going to, you know, surf in a Quaker bonnet and and a formless burlap gown, and I'm only going to have lunch by myself. And then they come in and report that back, and you go, we've done good work here. This is all that we've been talking about. And then if it fails, you go, well, I got them now for another 2 years because there's going to be an extraordinary aftermath.
That's right.
Well,
more therapy.
Oh, God. Well, it's so funny when you were saying that, it sparked a thought in my Witzel-sucked brain. And we were talking before about, before we started the podcast, about Brian Attein, that guy who did the ridiculous audition for Stanley Kubrick many years ago. But I just started thinking of, when you're living on the street, you see a lot of stuts. but not the stuts you want to see, man. Like, I'm sure Stutz was looking at that, all the wrong stuts. Like, he was just misinterpreting the therapy. And I go back to the point of, like, poor Stutz. Stutz may not have a lot of time left, or he may have plenty of time left, but he may not have a lot of time left being able to, like, vocalize and do therapy. Yeah. And for this, for Jonah Hill to be the first Google association with Stutz, like, for the rest of his life, seems like.
But I think from Stutz's perspective, he'd probably say, you should have seen how fucked up he was when he first got here.
Good point. Because
it's all just about getting better, not achieving perfection.
That's true.
Like, he's gone from someone with no self-esteem who thinks he can't be in a relationship to ordering women around. So that's progress.
It's
from a psychological perspective. Like, look at all the confidence. He can ask her to give up her whole identity. He's no longer like the little chubby kid they made fun of. That's progress.
It's a hilarious overcorrection.
I'm too hot for you.
Yeah, Jonah.
Wow, look at this. We've done great work here.
Oh my God.
You're too fat for me. See?
Yes.
It's
working. Oh God. And we know a couple of other people who go to see Stutz, and I'm just wondering what they're thinking about this whole mess.
Right.
I could
humorous.
A great birthday gift would be one session with Stutz.
Ooh.
A gift certificate to Stutz.
Yeah.
Do you have gift certificates?
Yeah. Do you do coupons? Oh God.
I honestly, like, I had such a great therapist before. I think I've talked about how he ghosted me.
Yes.
It's not written. Yeah. It's not. I'm being
it's funnier.
A little
it's funnier yes. to say that.
Yeah. Right. But, you know, I'd kind of like to go back. I don't want to do anything else on Zoom. I'm so sick of Zoom. But the thing about it is, I don't want to start over again with a new therapist.
Oh, yeah,
here's
worse.
My mom. Here's my dad. Here's
yes.
me.
Yeah.
Here's, and it's like, I just can't.
I know. Yeah. I started with a new therapist back in last September.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've almost been there a year now. I love this guy, but we had a very interesting exchange in one of our last sessions where we are on Zoom now because I'm here and he's there in LA, and he likes to get very close to the camera. and he,
oh, that's smart.
He and I have similar noses, so it's like the two pictures
like
that I have. It's like literally a sort of a nose to nose like thing. On the, and he speaks very quietly, and he asks all the right questions. But I sort of pictured this guy was maybe my age, maybe like 2 to 3 years younger than I am. And it came out in our last session that he's 61. And I was like, what the fuck? I felt so, it made me feel so much worse after the session. I was like, that's all I could think about. Like, any of the good work we did in the session, I'm like, this guy's fucking sick. What the fuck?
Because he looks so young.
He looks so young. He's got like a weird kind of like babyish face and doe eyes. And he leaves.
But isn't that good? I mean, doesn't that show you, wow, if I can clear my mind, then maybe I've found the fountain of youth.
Ooh,
yeah,
good
maybe.
Silver lining.
See, you're seeing the positive. I think you mm-hmm. see the positive in others, but not yourself. And I think I'm guilty of that as well.
Yeah.
Let me stick my nose up in this camera and talk to you.
What if we took our shirts off?
Nope.
All you see is a nose and forehead in the camera.
If I took my shirt off, all you'd see is a nose and tits in the camera.
Don't make me say bitch.
Oh,
tits.
A generous C cup.
That's gentleman C.
A gentleman C. I'm telling you, with the coming of this pool, it's never been in more stark relief. Well, that was fun to talk about. Goldie, did you want to wrap anything up from your Colorado trip? I know you...
I'll just talk about it for two minutes or so.
Fun, yeah. Jumped so off a diving board, which I love.
Yeah. I love that yeah. photo.
I put a swimsuit photo on Instagram for 24 hours apologizing to Jonah Hill.
Yes, I love
that. Because I jumped off a diving board for the first time since 1987. Colorado is wonderfully... like the 1980s. There are kids riding around on
perfect.
Little dirt bikes,
oh,
kind
cool.
of in their cul-de-sacs. There's like HOA pools with diving boards. Like a lot of the stuff that liability seemed to have washed away from places like LA and
I
don't know other places, but
yeah,
that
here
they don't have that here because it's inherently unsafe in the mountains, right?
Yes.
It's inherent like in the snow and the cold right. and the elements and hiking, like you can't just say there's no way you'll get hurt. And right. so, you know, every time I go anywhere, I think to myself, God, we should just move here, you know, because it's so beautiful. And we were up in Vail in the mountains, and I would go by this stream every morning to meditate. And
wow.
It was really wonderful. Awesome. And then we went to this place called Glenwood Hot Springs, which is amazing. It's like a natural pool, and it's about, you know, 100 degrees plus, maybe 100, 304, and it's healing waters and sulfur. And then there's a medium temperature pool, and it's giant, and everyone's there, the whole community, you know, like people of all walks of life. And then there's like a one you can swim in, and there's a diving board, and then there's a water slide where you get on a raft, and it's like you're whitewater rafting. It's amazing. Wow. And so I was like, look at this wonderful community, and like, God, this is what's so what's missing from LA. It's like a place where everyone goes and you don't feel self-conscious. You take off your shirt. And then I saw a man with a swastika tattoo. Just walking around, just having a soak.
Jesus. Whoa.
And everyone, I guess everyone's fine with it.
Oh, yeah, that's just Larry.
Just one guy.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That's awful.
Where we are as a society now. Because I feel like 30 years ago, every guy in the place would have been like, we're going to beat the shit out of that guy.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, well, you know, there's just one.
It's just a point of view. God. We all have them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And it's funny because you said at the beginning of that talk about the hot springs and everything, people from all walks of life, and I was thinking in Colorado, yeah, what is that? Everyone from German-Irish to Dutch-Irish. The whole panoply.
I mean, there
of
were
human
like
existence.
Literally women in hijabs. Like,
oh, yeah.
Head, like, you know, yeah. So I was this is pretty cool. You just know.
And then
I don't know, man. Can't we just maybe have a rule that... people with swastika tattoos need to wear like water shirts.
Yeah. Right? Yes.
I'm not even saying kick them out. I'm just saying, could they keep their shirts on?
Jesus.
Yes.
I know. I wear one for my tits. Shirts. He can wear one for the swastika. Come on.
Anyway, then I was like, maybe we don't need to move here. We could just kind of come every or a week every year.
Yeah. Much better that way.
Well, it sounds like you had a fun trip.
Sure.
Except for the swastika.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right, what better segue into Johnny Jokes?
From Hollywood, here. Johnny's a no-spin zone that time. Just
no spin,
stuff.
Just straight stuff. And speaking of straight stuff, we're going to do a straight down the middle joke here at the beginning. Well, Wimbledon Wimbledon had its first tournament since the passing of Queen Elizabeth, and the fans at Center Court honored her memory with a moment of sitting on their ass and doing nothing. Straight down the middle joke.
There you go.
Straight down the middle. All
and
right.
We're off.
And we're off. NATO, maybe you've heard of them, NATO has voted Sweden into their alliance. This vote signals to the world that the alliance is committed to peace in the North Atlantic and bowls of delicious gummy snacks. Yeah, that's what I thought of that one, too.
I guess Swedish fish. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, it is. You got there. You got there. Several Ukrainian adult film stars are creating peace porn, with the proceeds going towards the war effort. If you're interested in watching, simply search Busty Babes Covered in Kumbaya.
Oh, my God.
Peace porn. Kumbaya. Peace porn. Okay, a new study has concluded that the number of people with dementia will triple by 2050. It should be noted, however, that the study was conducted by the whispering voice in my brain. Dementia. Yeah. And finally, thankfully, finally, Football Hall of Famer O.J. Simpson turned 75 last week. The Naked Gun star celebrated at a local restaurant surrounded by family and very nervous waiters. He killed one once.
There Second we Johnny. Go. A very nervous family and very nervous waiters. I mean, he did both.
That would have been better. That would have been better.
Well, kidney stones are now rising in babies and toddlers, and the market is adapting. Pampers now brags they can hold 5 pounds of rocks. Okay. This week, cocaine was found in the White House. And this is nice. Hunter Biden offered to help sniff out the owner.
Very nice. Hey.
Both sides.
These are just
both
jabs. Sides. These are just jabs. Actor Jamie Foxx, good news. Actor Jamie Foxx is doing better after a health scare. Good. Doctors say he'll be up and about and begging for an Oscar in no time.
Yes.
Kind of known for that. Okay. This is the rare Carson into double Gutfeld.
Wow. Oh,
I'm going to attempt a Carson into a double Gutfeld. Oh. Here we go.
Love it. Love it.
Well, a new survey says 40% of Ivy League students now identify as LGBTQ+. You know, Ed, my nephew goes to Harvard, and I'm happy to report he's getting gay A's. Now for the Gutfeld part. These kids are now so confused, 80% of them don't even know if they're non-binary.
No, Gutfeld, you rascal.
Professors are getting in trouble for transplaining.
And
I'll end on a norm. The Earth had its hottest week on record, and scientists are blaming overpopulation. But don't worry, ladies. They say we can still save the planet if this week everyone switches to blowjobs.
Great closer. Great closer. It's so funny that you did the gay A's. I've been trying to get this one about an LGBTQ tennis player who won in gay sets. So we were like in the same, right in the same area.
Yeah.
Could have helped me this week. Didn't think hard enough.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh, fans, oh boy, we are lucky today. We've been excited for this for a while. We have a great guest with us today. I mean, this is a big box on our comedy bingo card here today. We have, oh, what, I was looking at your Wikipedia, Nick, and you're in so much, I don't know what to talk about. I mean, oh, hello. That was really the only one I remember.
That was the only one.
He's been in so many comedy movies. He's co-created the wildly popular Big Mouth with another friend of ours, Andrew Goldberg. He's been doing comedy. He's been making us laugh for years upon years. Please welcome the hilarious Nick Kroll. Nick, how are you today?
Welcome. I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast. It's a thrill to be here.
Oh, thanks, Jesus. Can we take that again?
Wow, well, I mean, he's so such subdued. A good actor. You know, like, what he does is he underplays the first take.
I guess so.
And it just gets bigger from there. Yeah.
Now we have a baseline, Nick, so let's just play with the next one.
We can work from there.
All right. Hey, guys, thanks so much. I'm actually a big fan of the show. So.
Okay, all right. He went up a notch. Nick, I was thinking back because... you are, as we mentioned, you are great childhood friends with our friend and coworker for a while, Andrew Goldberg.
Yes.
And I think that I used to see you a lot more just kind of out at events when maybe you were coming to Family Guy things or just that kind of stuff. And I don't know if you remember this because you're a celebrity, you meet a lot of people, but we used to have do this thing when we saw each other, and it cracks me up when I think about it, where you and I somehow just naturally fell into this thing where we would see each other and we would instantly go into this very limp Jewish hug where you and I would like literally rest our heads on each other's shoulders, and we reverted back to our true Jewish blob forms. And that warms me to think about.
So I know both of you guys, I think, even before you know that I know you. How about that?
Wow.
Since childhood, I've been following you two. You guys are a couple years older than me, I think, but I've been
five.
Watching. I've been watching, but I know I saw you in the Morts.
How did that happen?
Josh Weinstein, someone you guys have known forever, was my sister's childhood like prom date, like her boyfriend, girlfriend. So I would come to New York to like solo arts, and I think I would watch your guys' show. So I was like watching you guys from a long time ago.
And then saying, oh God, I'm funnier than that.
Yeah, I could be a comedian.
This is what passes as comedy, then I'm going to be just fine. Thank you.
Oh God, well, you so outstriped us at everything we were trying to do.
But the limp hug is, that's a really nice, I have no memory of ever meeting you, and so that's what complicated here. I just watched you from afar. It was too much. It was too much. And Goldie, I've always been confused about your name. It's been a real, and I know I'm sure this has been well covered.
Me too.
But I haven't had a chance to publicly talk to you about how confused I am by how you're known.
Yeah, I've really sort of fucked myself here. So in brief, I'm not like really trying to hide my name or anything. My name's Jonathan Goldblatt. I was doing stand-up under that name for a year or two. And then I went to this open mic and I got in a fight with a heckler. I got banned from the show. And, you know, at that time, stage time was so dear and precious that I was like, this is a crisis to not be able to do this open mic. Like, I got to figure this out. So my friend Dan Steinberg, who since became a rabbi, who was a comic, I bet him, I said, the guy who runs this show is so dumb, I bet I could come back next week under a different name and he won't even notice.
Yep.
And so it was like a $20 bet. And so I picked the name Julius Sharp. Julius was my dad's name, and then Sharp was because I was a fan of Shannon Sharp.
I was gonna say.
So, and I was like, that sounds good. That sounds like interesting. And so I did stand up under that name, And I found like I really liked not being myself, that it sort of freed me. And also thinking strategically, like realistically, is anyone ever going to pay money to go see a Jonathan Goldblatt show? Like people like, I got Jonathan Goldblatt tickets. Like it just seemed not a realistic proposition. So I just started like using
Jerry
that name.
Seinfeld is equally Jewish, but Jerry Seinfeld is so much cooler sounding than Jonathan Goldblatt.
Yeah, Jonathan Goldblatt is such a mouthful. Like you go, I'm going to say this name. It's going to take about 20 seconds. You can zone out. And then I come back. You know, like no one knows how to spell it. Everyone thinks Goldblatt is gold black. You know, people are like, does Jonathan have an eight? Like it's so fucking confusing. Yeah. So anyway, I got hired at Kilbourne as a writer and I figured, I'm not really a writer. I don't know what I'm doing. I've never written anything that I would quickly go back, be fired and go back to stand up. But then I had been doing stand up under this name. So I registered Julius Sharp with the Guild. But I don't like being called Julius by my friends. I like being called Goldblatt or Goldie, which was my whole life. So everyone just called me Goldie. So I've created a huge fucking mess. I don't know a way out of it. And I'm going to die soon enough that it won't matter.
Thank well, you.
I love the breaking down of the name Goldblatt. Like, just like you don't want to, it sounds like somebody dumped soup out a car window. Goldblatt.
Yeah, it's like Ellis Island. Why did no one just go like, all right, you're not bringing that shit here. Like take something else.
What about a Hall of Fame tight end for a last name? What did you think of
Butkus? But, yeah. No, he was I'm thinking of Ditka.
But wait, Shannon Sharp, how did you feel about Sterling? It was Shannon Sharp.
I like Sterling Sharp too. I just thought it was a strong name.
Sure.
And I had hair, so it was like realistic that, you know, that something might happen for me at that time. But anyway, how did we meet? Because I
just was watching you do stand up in New York. I was just, you were through the open mic stage where I was in that open mic stage.
Yeah,
watching you and thinking about changing my name
because I only became aware of you,
and I decided not to.
DeMarcus Ware.
I only became aware of you when you so quickly passed me that I felt an enormous tailwind in my face, and I went, "Oh fuck!" And what is he like? 8 years younger? I'm
Nick,
I'm
and
done.
His name is Nick. He's got one syllable on each name.
Nick Kroll is a super good name.
It's
great
a very
name.
Good name.
Yeah.
And Nick, in doing my research on you for today.
Right, but just so you know, my real name was Menachem Fegele. And I changed it.
Menachem Fegele. Middle name Zoftig. Yeah. Menachem Zoftig Fegele. But I learned something I didn't know, which is you grew up in Roy.
Yeah.
You grew up in Rye,
yeah.
New York, which is a fun name to say as a Jew. Mm-hmm. Rye, New York. I'm from Rye.
Rye or Roy?
And you grew up, what's that?
Rye or Roy?
Rye.
R-Y-E,
pronounced
R-Y-E. Not to be confused with Rye Brook.
No.
But it's just Rye.
And okay. Sorry. Please don't to either town confuse
yeah. them. Oh, they hate it. Oh, what a rivalry there. There's a bit, by the way, in just saying with that nasal Jewish accent, just town names in that area. Because I'm
Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Portchester.
See, I knew he would be better.
When you do the impression also, because our listeners can't see it, your lips have the perfect level of wetness. It's and that's selling it too.
The Four Corners in Scottsdale.
What is it? What? Tell us a little bit about when you do that voice, which is so funny. Like, mm-hmm. Are you conscious of like what you're doing and not doing to make that voice funny? No air is passing through your nose when you do.
I
that
hope
voice.
Not. I think if there is, something's gone wrong. That would mean I'm sleeping soundly.
Yeah,
I'm not waking myself up 100 times, which I'm not. What's interesting is Rye. Westchester. It's like Rye's a pretty waspy town. It's like not that. It's like kind of, which I think somehow informs who I ended up being, which is like obviously as the first, let's say, however many minutes, 15 minutes have been pretty Jewish.
Yeah.
And my town, I come from a Jewish house, but my town is incredibly not. It's sort of just WASPy. So like feeling very Jewy and like a ultimately very WASPy town. And then, but then surrounding it and where I grew up, like Andrew's from White Plains.
Is and that how you two found each other? Is
we went, we met at Jewish day school. We met in called Solomon Schechter.
Oh, I've heard of that. Yeah, oh, that's very good.
It's a very important franchise in the conservative Jewish day school community. But they have changed the name. It's weird. They have another name of the school now.
Menachem Begin.
So I think, honestly, it's just New York area. You just kind of, it all, for Armisen does the best bit of breaking down like New York accents.
I love that.
It's so, it's
yeah, Bronx. Really,
yeah, you know, and it's—he's kind of not actually changing the New York accent. It's just an attitude inside of it.
Yeah.
But God, I love his one of doing Upper West Side. He goes medical condition. Just the words he uses.
It's the funniest. So I think it's some of that. It's a lot of sports radio. I feel like it's a lot. Of, like when I go home, and I don't know if you guys feel this when you go back to whatever fucking cesspool,
Boston yeah, whatever. Area.
Whatever mud shtetl that you've come from. Boston, right? So you hear those accents on like sports radio, and it, there's something weirdly so familiar and comforting inside of it that you know what I mean? It's very.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
You know. Totally agree with that. And now you talk about sports radio because we're victims of that in our area as well. Mm-hmm. But I believe, are you also a Mets fan?
I am.
See, confuses me no end because
I seem a winner.
Right. You look like a winner. You seem like a winner. And I am confused why people in the New York area choose to be Mets fans. So tell me, how did your Mets fandom come to you?
I mean, I just come up perfectly. I'm 8 years old in 86. So I hit baseball at like 4 or 5 in those 2 years leading up where it's like Strawberry and Good in 84. And then by 86, it's the best team in the history of sports. Yeah.
Right.
I'm 8. My dad has tickets and I go to games. I go to 3 playoff games in that 86 run, including game 6.
Oh, wow.
You bastard.
I'm also at game 2. So I'm as everybody knows, I'm a huge Wally Backman fan.
As everyone knows.
I was already a little guy and playing short and second. And so like Wally Backman was my guy. Mm-hmm. So I was at game 2 of that series when Tim Tuffle. And so I hated Tim Tuffle because he was the right-handed option. And he was like, and he was the Tuffle shuffle and like, yeah. You know.
Famous error
in game 2, I think, which is, and they lose 1-0 in that game.
Yeah.
And then I go back for game 6 with my brother and my like aunt and uncle take us and they, I don't know. Anyway, so I was at that game and I was at a couple, one or two games of that Houston series with against like Mike Scott, Nolan Ryan right before that. So
yeah, that was unbelievable.
Did you go to the long one or was that one in Houston? I remember one of them went like 17 innings.
Yes. I can't remember if that was it, but it was the game that like Dykstra hits a home run to win it. I don't know if it's the 17th, but like hits a home run to like win the game. So it was like that magical season was like, I was 8 years old.
Right.
And he's a great guy too.
Yeah, Dykstra.
Dykstra and Backman. There, it turns out Wally Backman then like is one of the first guys to, he gets the job like to manage the Diamondbacks. And then it just comes out like pre-Me Too, like historically bad guy that gets like loses the job, gets hired and then loses the job before he even takes it because of what his
comes up.
I think. So that was my guy. Dykstra taught me to eat pussy.
Well,
the old Shea was one of the great, like, horrible experiences where I remember the first time I was there was like a cyclone of garbage blowing around the field. And when someone would hit a home run, they would half inflate this apple because I guess it's the Big Apple, but it just was reminiscent of someone trying and failing to get an erection. Like it just would like kind of go up and then go, you know, I've had one too many scotches. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you can still just get rail scotch at a game. It was Harry M. Stevens was the vendor, and it was Royal Crown Cola.
Oh, the worst. Okay. The worst
RC cola, the worst of the colas.
by the way, this is the best story of how someone became a Mets fan I've heard. Because I feel like when I talk to other people who are Mets fans and ask them the same question, they say, this life chose me, my dad handed it down, my grandfather. But for you to say I was in the midst of this magic of 86 at this certain age, that makes a lot of sense. Because the Yankees kind of stunk then.
The Yankees were garbage. It was easy to be a Mets fan at that particular moment. And also my dad grew up in Queens and was a Giants fan. And when they moved out west, he sort of went towards them. He went towards the Mets.
Yeah, because he couldn't in good conscience root for the Yankees. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Let me ask, because we were on the flip side of this, and I feel like that World Series shaped my personality and made me sort of a cynic, bad vibes, hard to be around, like loser.
You're putting it on that.
yeah, I am.
More than your last name being Gold. But, okay.
It's the whole package. But did that make you feel like, oh, things will always work out and you just gotta try? Like, did it give you a positive outlook on life?
Look. My dad had season tickets to the fucking Mets. It was not hard to have like a positive outlook on life at that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's been an easy look for me to have a positive outlook on life. Mm-hmm. Yes. But in this particular case, it did until 88, when it's the Mets are playing the Dodgers. It's the Kirk Gibson run with like Oral Hershiser and all those cats. You know those cats.
Oh, those cool cats.
Oral Hershiser, one of the coolest cats.
Coolest cats. He seems like the Mike Pence of athletes.
Totally. Well, like, didn't go to the minors, went to a conversion therapy. Right. So that season the Mets lose to the Dodgers and it's over. Like it's truly immediately over.
Yep.
And I kind of remember like crying when the Mets lost the Dodgers that year and thinking and being like, I don't like this feeling of like a team like being so sad when a team like loses something.
Yeah.
And I think I started to pull a bit away from like getting super like bummed out by a team. You know what I mean?
Less invested.
That's smart. I mean, and Goldie's right. That certainly shaped me too. That 86 World Series. Yeah. And
everything will be taken away from you always.
Yeah.
Was the message.
Well, it was such an interesting year for Boston sports because the 86 Celtics were one of the best teams in NBA history. And like watching them but then that was
You don't have to tell him. He's Larry Bird.
Wow. Never during the Celtics years. It's always I'm really focused on the early Larry. But then you guys have this weird thing because I have my Boston friends and was in New York when all of a sudden the Red Sox win, and then that's a big formation for your adulthood that you're like your team doesn't print. No, it's like it's imprinted. Losing like disappointment is too imprinted.
Well, it was too late.
For me, it was like, oh, thank God, now I don't have to care anymore.
Yeah.
And then I was able to drop it.
Yeah.
Well, also, it for me, it just felt like it was awesome. And honestly, it was the Pats really kind of started that whole thing. But then when there's sort of a popular trend in Boston to feel like, as great as 2004 was when we came back against the Yankees and finally won the World Series, that everything kind of changed, like our identity changed, like the identity of the lovable losers or the hateable losers was gone. And then we didn't know who to be.
Right.
So it was just a weird sort of spot in our.
Yeah. That's lifetime. But you're saying both of you guys, you're like, no, I'm still a pessimist because like the grooves of disappointment were too deep to overcome. As like the 21st century Boston becomes like a real winning city.
Yes, and also there are so many ways in which like our loser personality can take over even a winning streak, where there are ways within that to be like, it's not going to last. Oops, this guy got injured. It's over. The Spygate, forget it. 2007, you know, any everything comes along to kind of ruin it. But Nick, I see like on your Instagram, which is always fun to look at, like you will often post hilarious pictures of yourself as a child, and you always seem to be like in a sport coat surrounded by your siblings with this devilish smile and look on your face. And you just look like, to me, when I look at you, I get jealous of that because I feel like you had a very happy childhood growing up. Is that the case?
I think in the grand scheme of things, for sure. And it's sort of what I was referring to earlier of like looking positive. Yeah, I got dealt a real good hand of like, I'm the youngest of four. And those are all like pictures from various all four bar and bat mitzvahs, sort of.
Yes,
you know what I mean? Which you get that. I think it's partly because my parents didn't. There wasn't a lot of like pictures taken or video taken of us in regular time. So especially as a fourth, there's just like less pictures.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so those bar mitzvah pictures end up being like the highest quality resolution. And they do just tell like such a fucking beautiful story. I had a nice family and I was the last one. And so I could just be like a little.
And so you growing up in this conservative Jewish family in Rye, what kind of stuff like made you laugh as a kid? What kind of comedy were you into as a child?
You know, I'd say like the early seasons of Family Guy.
Nah, stop it. You're not that much younger.
I mean, we want like the Mel Brooks obviously is like just massive for like for me. It was. And we had I'm thinking of the VHSs we had. We had History of the World. We had Blazing Saddles. Eventually we get The Producers, which becomes like massively important to me, much more, more than almost all of it from Mel Brooks. Wow. And then Top Secret. We had a
VHS.
Top Secret.
Underrated comedy.
It's worth it if you can go back and watch it. You know, go spend a couple hours. I know you got a lot of free time. Go watch all of Top Secret.
Yes.
By the way, it's like 1 million bits. Like one, there's a joke every 3 seconds at least. It's like there's a gag constantly. That was big. And then it was like me and Andrew watched those stuff, but we also watched like Wayne's World came out when we were like 13. Wow. Like the perfect age for that. And we would like.
When you were watching Wayne's World and they held out the yellow pills and the black and white screen and said Nuprin, little yellow different. I like lost my shit. I was like a Beatlemaniac woman, like standing up and screaming. Like that was the single funniest moment of my life till that point.
It's and then the Pizza Hut. I mean, or it's I don't know if it's Domino's or Pizza, but he it's like it was mind blowing at that moment. And
yeah.
You can make fun of a commercial? Yeah, inside of it.
Well, it's funny that you say Wayne's World because you have what a quality that Mike Myers had when he was on Saturday Night Live, which is I used to say about Mike Myers on Saturday Night Live, he can walk across the stage and not say anything and I'm laughing. Mm. And he has this sort of like it's almost like, and apparently I've never really met him, but apparently he's not exactly like this in real life, but he had this sort of joy to him when he was performing that I think you have as well. So do you think that watching people like Mike Myers, like Dana Carvey, that influenced you in terms of like how you perform?
For sure. I mean, I think also the relationship Wayne and Garth has been like a various versions. And I've played Wayne and Garth. Like back then it was I was Wayne and Andrew was Garth, right? But then in like, you know, like in Oh Hello or different partnership collaborations I've had, that power dynamic status changes a lot. But it's always a lot of my stuff has ended up being some version of that.
Yeah.
Of two people from the same world, but of different statuses who are driving everything. That relationship is sort of driving everything. But yeah, I mean, I remember I had the Wayne's World. Did you guys have the Wayne's World book like that I had in my bathroom for years?
No.
So there was like a Wayne's World, like, you know, it was Mike and Rob, his wife at the time, you know, who was wife throughout that, you know, for many years. I remember they wrote it together, and it was like a weird little handbook, and it was like curled in my bathroom for like 3 years, from like 11 to, you know, 14. And in the back, it was like he was filling out a form, Wayne was, and one of them was like occupation, and it was International Man of Mystery. And then, you know, and then he follows up with Austin Powers, and I was like,
yeah. yes,
Easter. I know. Did other people think you guys were funny, or were you just cracking each other up and people were like, what's with these nerds?
I think we were definitely the entertainment, like when we were providing the entertainment, whether it was well received or not is up to date, but we put our flag down that we were going to be there to do some stuff. It's like the Purim show, the Purim talent show, as Wayne and Garth.
Heyman.
Yeah, and then, yeah, exactly. Rob Lowe, I guess, would be Heyman in the Wayne's World.
Yes, story. That's right.
Totally. Can I tell a brief Mike Myers story that I've never told on this podcast? Please. So I was a page at NBC, and Mike Myers came back to SNL, and they said, like, you know, you can escort him from the freight elevator, and then if he needs anything, that you'll be the one to bring it to him for the week. So he arrives with his wife.
Yeah, well, cool. Yeah.
So he arrives with his wife, and he says, we both have a blood condition or whatever, that we need a different type of red meat every 45 minutes. So if you could go get us like a steak or bacon or lamb chops. And so the entire week I would have to go down. There was like a nice steakhouse at the base of 30 Rock. Every 45 minutes, I'd have to go down and get like a chop, a filet mignon, a sirloin strip. And I would put it in their dressing room, and they would take like one bite. And then I was so broke at the time that like at the end of the night, I was like, okay, I'm going to cut the other end off. I'm just like wolfing down all their leftover meat from their dressing room.
Totally. Were they like, did they have a dog that they didn't want? Like, what was like, did they,
I wonder if it
were
was
they
for
really
you.
Eating? Yeah. Were they really,
I don't know, because first of all, the backstory of like a blood thing, like, you don't have to tell me that.
Yeah.
And then if you both have it, how rare is it? And why would you, but like, the whole thing was so fucking crazy. I was like, is this a joke?
Yeah. Or
were they eating it? Were there pieces?
No, they were taking like one bite. And so I was like eating, you know, like 12 steaks at the end of the night because I was so hungry.
At first, garbage. I thought they were fucking with you, but now I think they were doing it to feed you.
Maybe it was.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't want to hijack. I didn't know that I'd ever get to tell that little story.
Yeah,
that really, I would say like NBC's putting faith in you. They're like, Goldblatt can handle it. Goldblatt can handle the meat situation, the Mike Myers memorandum.
Yeah. And I did. I mean, I was, you know, I was of service. I was
sure.
Yeah.
Good hashtag, little helper.
That's your love language. It's acts of service for Mike Myers.
No, bringing clam shells of meat.
Yes. His love language is garbage mouthing leftovers.
Yep.
Gary Jannetty told us that term, garbage mouthing, from when he was a waiter. So you, Nick, you brought up a couple things in talking about what you watched growing up that I want to ask you about. So Mel Brooks, and obviously in my household as well, I mean, in many Jewish households, he was absolutely the king. But you got a chance to work with Mel Brooks on History of the World Part 2. So what was that like? Had you met him before? And what was it like working with him?
I'm now kicking myself that we didn't call History of the World Part 2.
Right this moment.
I'm like, how fucking, if we had called it.
True.
Part two, like that would have been that. Anyway, sorry.
You're halfway to,
now,
to a joke.
I'm genuinely already. Kind of like, I'm a little pissed.
We'll give you just change that on the streaming service.
It's not hard. It's I'll talk to Hulu product. It was amazing. It was like, it was the most surreal thing I think I've dealt with in my career, of which is just being like, truly being like, you know, getting the call to be like, hey, do you want to do this with Mel? And then talking about it and sort of throughout the process, having him involved. And then like he narrates the show and sort of kind of directing him, trying to direct Mel Brooks over, you know, like doing all the narration, and him being so funny and smart and collaborative. And then also very funny when he was like, no, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, and you're like, fair enough. And, you know, because it was really a trip. Really.
Yeah. That's quite an honor. And something that, you know, that's the kind of thing that when you tell your parents about it, they're like, oh, you know.
Because... Well, that was literally, so I was in Rye at my parents' house when we were recording him, and my dad got to sit in the office listening to me talk to Mel Brooks and getting, you know what I mean? It was like, that was, and then they sort of met over Zoom at the end, and that was really cool.
Yeah, that's a
validating. By the way, my dad hated Mel Brooks, so it was sort of an trying to keep him away from me. He was a more of like he was sort of like more of like a Dick Van Dyke kind of. Anyway, it was
that's hilarious. Is that true? Your dad was sort of more
no.
Okay.
That was so funny. Right. That was so funny. I couldn't remember the name. Someone named Andy is who I'm. I can't remember the name last.
Andy
name.
Rooney.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad thought that Andy Rooney was comedy. He never thought Mel Brooks.
Well, but it's
interesting. Happened to stamps.
Whatever happened to stamps. But yeah, because I can totally relate to that thing where my Jewish mother is very proud of me, but has never watched Family Guy, has never listened to this podcast, has never seen Ted, but will tell everyone that she meets about how my son does Family Guy, my son does Ted. Like, she doesn't want to deal with what it is. But so
yeah.
I wonder if your parents were sort of like looking at your stuff like, Captain Underpants, I'm not watching that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for me. You know, like my mom's very supportive and also will watch stuff. But then there's definitely things that she'll just be like, well, it's not for me. And I think like even Big Mouth goes very far.
Yes.
A lot of it's like in the jokes and where we kind of. And so there's some stuff that there's just like, how could a, you know, an 80-year-old person tolerate the level of filth? So. Yeah. But very always supportive. And like, I don't know if you'll have this, but my dad or mom will be like, my dental hygienist, I guess, knows who you are. You know, and you're like, well, I wonder how that came up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
It's like,
yeah, my mom still to this day has Family Guy DVDs in the trunk of her car. And like, if ever she meets someone who expresses
really?
Any level of interest in it, she'll like
but
run
she,
out to her car
she
and hand
really
them
not watch? Does she really?
No, she really doesn't, because she's a delicate hothouse flower, you know, a 50s Bobby Soxer to the core. Like, okay. So her whole life is like Blueberry Hill and everything is very traditional. And so to hear any jokes about, you know, ejaculation or, you know, anything that's irreverent, it's she really bristles at that, but she loves that other people like it.
Yeah. So my mom just thinks I work at Fleet Bank. I didn't even tell her I do this. What's the point?
Okay.
I don't
want
to deal with it.
Hey, by the way, congrats.
That it's a better job than this.
Actually, yeah, dude.
Goldie, wasn't that you singing that one bank thing to one
that was
you
me.
Two?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought so. But so Nick, the other thing you mentioned in talking about, you know, sort of the dynamic of two person performances was Oh Hello, which was hilarious, by the way. So funny. So you met John Mulaney when you guys were both at Georgetown. Is this this is right? And so tell me a little bit about how that friendship developed.
I got John addicted to cocaine.
Oh, good for you.
When he got to Georgetown, I was a senior night, and he had never done anything. No drugs, no alcohol, no nothing. And I bring him in. I said, if you want to join the improv group, if you want comedy, you gotta abuse
no.
substances. And he said, I don't want to. And I said, I'm gonna do this to you.
And he never looked back.
No, he never looked back. No.
And then the student became the teacher.
Yeah, he was corrupted by that. Yeah. He went to Georgetown. I was a senior and he was a freshman. And also our friend Jacqueline Novak was the same year as him, was really talented, funny comedian. We've got a great show that is about to come out. There are people before me also, like Boston, a bunch of Boston folks who, Birbiglia. And when I think of my Boston friends experiencing the Red Sox winning, it's like Conrad Mulcahy, Brian Donovan, if you can believe it, they're both from the Boston area.
Yeah. Wow. Funny.
were like, they were my eyes into that, like 2004 Red Sox comeback against the Yankees, like at a bar in the West Village. I remember going to, like, there's a bar in Leroy and 7th Ave-ish. There was, like, I think a Boston-ish bar that, like, everyone would go to watch the games at. And anyway, so I go to school with all them and start doing improv there. And then John, my last year and his first year. And then he starts coming to New York throughout, you know, and then moves to New York. And we started doing pretty quickly. I was hosting a show called Welcome to Our Week with Jesse Klein, who I know in various ways. But like, so, you know, Goldie, like she and I met her on my way to like my second open mic at the Parkside Lounge, which I'm assuming you went to. Did you know that one with like Joe?
Yeah, I did. I mean, you know that one. Yeah.
So I met Jesse. I'm walking down Houston and this girl in front of me trips and on the street. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to go tell everyone you tripped. And she's like, don't tell anybody. It's a real kind of meet cute New York moment. And I then stop at Katz's to eat a bunch of hot dogs, natural casing hot dogs, before I go to the Parkside to sign up for that open mic, which it's probably still the same deal, which is like you sign up and then they pick all the names out of a hat. And like, you could be like second or you could be like 45th.
Oh, yeah.
And I walk into the Parkside and Jesse is this girl, that cute girl who tripped on the street, is there. And she leaves because she's 45th, and she tells me, she's like, I'm practicing because I'm going to this place called Luna Lounge, which I had never, you know, it's like,
yeah.
That was my way to hear about like Luna, you know, where you're like, and I go to see her there. And I think it was like Roseanne's first comeback and Sarah Silverman was there. I was like, I couldn't believe all the Jewesses, the beautiful, funny Jewesses before me. We host a couple of years later, host the show Welcome to Our Week. You know, Eugene and Bobby just started invite them up on Thursdays at Rafifi. You know, so it's like that period where we started doing a lot of shows there. And then she moves to LA to, she got a job writing on that. And David Spade's like,
yeah, that's what I was on that. The showbiz show.
The showbiz show. Yes. This is post Kilborn. This is a post Kilborn Goldie Julius.
Yeah. This is, I had fallen into basic cable and I was, my dark period.
Right. Your dark night of the soul. Lasted from the moment the Red Sox lost in the 80s.
You guys don't understand. I'm a network writer. This is not permanent.
Yeah. And then she leaves for LA and then John and I take up. John, I was like, do you want to come and host this Thursday night show with me? And he's like, yeah. And we were like, we could do it as stand-ups, but we had started talking to each other as like these Oh Hello guys. Like, yeah, it was, yeah, you know, we'd started just being like, you want to do cocaine? What do you want to get? And so we start hosting this show weekly as those guys and drinking tuna teenies. And then we, you know, moved on to different things. And I when I got Kroll Show, we started doing Oh Hello on Kroll Show. And to our shock, because we were trying to get into comedy festivals. Like, we tried to get into Aspen with that show, a live show, and they were like, it's too New York. And it was like, if it's too New York for the Aspen Comedy Festival, where it's a bunch of comedians and old rich leather cowboy Jews, who have moved to Aspen, you know, like that version of a Jew, like those mountain Jews.
Yeah, they're desperately attempting to shed their Judaism.
Yeah, like, I'm Ralph Lauren. You know what I mean?
You're Ralph Lipschitz.
Yeah, yeah. Come to my ranch.
I was once in 2003 in the Fresh Faces showcase, so you can imagine like who would call that this a fresh face. But I just remember looking out in the audience, and about 30% of the people were wearing mink coats, and I was like, this is really fucking weird.
The salt of the earth, but not too much salt. Thank you.
And then my Kroll show ends, and Mulaney was doing the hit sitcom. Mulaney had just ended. We were both kind of like, what are we going to do now? And we were like, maybe we could do a live show with those guys. And it's sort of
such a great idea.
So how did that, but I mean, how do you go from maybe we could do this to getting a theatrical run? I mean,
so we started doing it in LA, but the loosest of concept, it was kind of the most organic building of a show. But it was like the first time we did it, it was like as if we were testifying, we were self-representing a murder trial that we had killed someone with too much tuna. Like, because it was, we did it as like pleading our case, but our case was that we were like cool, like stealing, and so certain things started to stick around. It was like, oh, maybe it's not like we're not, you know, self-representing, that it's like a play. Slowly, we had like a very loose outline over like 6 or 8 shows at UCB in LA. That we then sort of built a script for to do it. We did one night at UCB in New York, and Alex Timbers directed our show and came in, and then started to like join and watch it. And we started to form it into what then became like a sprawling thing at the Cherry Lane Theater, where we did like a 3 or 4 week run. And throughout the show kept honing it, and then took it on tour around the country. We'd do like 5 nights in Boston at the Wilbur. Not a big deal.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
The Wilbur.
better than the Wang.
Yeah. It's a great, that theater is really, there's like the bones to that theater is a great theater to do.
It's awesome.
We did that in a 4 or 5 cities around the country, and then sort of had a show that we then brought, you know, to Broadway. And then, but really didn't finish writing it, like locking the script on it, like until basically the week we finished the show and then shot it as a Netflix special. Like the third act, we kind of kept writing on stage every night. And, you know,
that's cool.
You know, because the third act is insane. It's that like Gil gets married to Lisa the raccoon. It's like, it's like nonsense.
But it was lovely nonsense. It was so great, and you two are so great in it. I really loved that whole thing happened. It's one of those things that I watched the Netflix special, and like I was just so happy that I'm so glad this comedy got presented to everybody, and people loved it. Like it just across the board.
You and I could be the touring company for that show.
That's right.
That's true. You really could. You really do have. You actually genuinely could. You have George and Bill. You have the right shape.
We could True West it. We could do one night.
Yeah, our understudies on Broadway were in the playbill. Were John Hamm and John Slattery were. but it's, to be frank, we need the circular shapes of Julius to really, for Goldie, like it was not true. Like one of those two guys could have played George, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's no, you need more, a lack of edges that a Jewish face presents.
Yeah, absolute lack of edges on a Jewish face.
For Gil Faison.
Oh my God! I've never heard a Jewish face described like that. So perfect.
It's the truth.
So that was an absolute triumph comedically. Like that's one of those things where you know people.
The
in
most
the comment,
fun thing I think I'll ever.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
When I was doing it, I think I knew, and I think John knew to some extent. Like, oh, this might be the most fun thing. The confluence of everything that would be cool and fun, and it might be downhill from here.
It was quite a con.
And then, on the last night, I was like, John, I know you haven't done cocaine in a while, but
I love it. So, you're the little devil on his shoulder, yeah. Just like those pictures of you at the bar mitzvah.
Yeah, yeah. You heard it here first.
Well, that was something I can say that, like, and I think I count Goldie in this as well. Like, we're in comedy, and oftentimes people in comedy love to hate things that are popular in comedy. But that was
Hello was
absolutely hate proof. It was just joy. So thank you for that.
That's very kind.
Unhateable. That's my quote. That's my poll quote.
Unhateable in every way.
I would know.
So, okay, we've talked about Oh Hello. We talked about working with the legend Mel Brooks. Now I want to talk about another absolute Jewish comedy legend who you got to work with on one of my favorite comedy shows of all time. You were on Curb. What kind of an experience was that for you? Because I'm not even having any working kind of relationship with Larry David. I'm terrified of him, but I think he's hilarious.
Yes.
So what was your experience like on that show?
It was great. I mean, luckily I had done The League and created by Jeff and Jackie Schaefer. And Jeff Schaefer, as you guys know through years, is like had gone from Seinfeld with Berg and Mandel and then over to Curb and then becomes like Larry's guy largely at Curb. I mean, fucking other two guys. Fuck Dave Mandel. Schaefer till I die. Schaefer till I die. That would be so funny if there was just like, Jeff, I do The League. And so inside of that, I then get to know the Larry kind of through Jeff in sort of certain social and other things. And then eventually Larry plays future Ruxin, my character on the show, and like the last season, like I meet future self. And and Ruxin sort of functioned in sort of like the Curb bits that got rejected, like Jeff would bring him over to The League, I guess, and sort of serve some of those like kind of very Kirby, like, no, what are you talking, you know? So my character got some of those bits. So by the time I do it, I had known him enough to be not like, oh my fucking God, I can't believe I'm doing this. And it was incredibly fun, and but Larry's a great laugher. I don't know if people
I've heard this about him. Yeah.
He's so in when you do bits with him, he gives it up. So it's not like if you're like dealing with him like at a medical facility, I'm sure it's not quite the same. I'm sure it's not quite as like loose and fun. But when you're doing medical a bit condition. With him, either like in the world or in comedy context, he's a good laugher, and so he makes you feel good. So you can have fun. And I got to do a kind of real classic Curb. They gave me a nice classic Curb bit of like the maitre d' at the restaurant that has the ugly section.
Such a great Curb thing.
So it was a real, they set me up nicely to have fun. But I, you know, it was like Ted Danson's there I had met but didn't know. And Richard Lewis was there briefly. And Susie, who's the funniest, and Jeff. It was just like, you know, I got to fucking, it was very fun.
The full Curb experience.
Yeah.
So Mel Brooks and Larry David. And then you've also worked with Kyrie Irving.
Yes.
Which, I want to talk to you about Uncle Drew because I loved this movie. And I remember watching, I believe I tweeted out, like, it was near the Oscar nominations. I was like, this is the best movie I saw this year. And, you know, I think we're all huge NBA fans. Yep. And I'm just wondering, like, what was it like to be on that set? To be in that movie and to work with those athletes.
It was so fun. It was like, hey, do you want to play the bad guy in a movie? You know, like the villain in the movie where it's like Uncle Drew, which there had been that viral videos that Kyrie had done dressed up as like an old guy baller,
yeah,
like who would go to playgrounds and like show up and
it was legit. It was very funny. Like
it was very funny, and you're watching Kyrie is an old man. He's talking shit. He's funny and it's great. So they make the movie of it, and they were like, "Do you want to play opposite all these guys?" You know, I knew Lil Rel, but then it was like, "You want to fuck with Reggie Miller and Shaq and
Chris Webber
and Lisa Leslie and all these, you know,
Nate Robinson.
It was just like this, so it was like, yeah. And I got to go down to Atlanta and play. It was Rucker Park, but in Atlanta. And I got to like fucking play and watch and talk shit to all of, including Reggie Miller, who is another, like, I was a Knicks fan, obviously, yeah. Mm-hmm. And am now again this season now that they were good.
you're back.
Abandoning them for a year.
Yeah, you're back.
Abandoned the Knicks. But this last year, I was like, I love the Knicks. So, but I was, because I would go to those games. I went to a few of those games, including the Reggie Miller Knicks game where he drops all those point chokes. And what they don't show a lot is he grabs, he at one point, like, looks at Spike Lee and is like, fucking suck my dick. Like, I don't say that as much.
Yeah, that was the 90s.
And so I got to be the bad guy coach and talk shit at Reggie, like, you know what I mean? Like awesome. On the court. Yeah. So like,
it was great. It's great. It's a great movie. It's
and Kyrie's
super
a fucking good actor. Like he's good as
they're all good. They're all, I mean, that's the thing is I wonder if there's some benefit to just being in front of big crowds for 82 games a year. If you pick up
interviews,
some kind of showmanship that then applies, but watching them up close, do you think you could get in an NBA game and score?
So in that movie, there's two moments. There was a moment where I was like, you know, I'm the coach of the other team, but we both enter the game, surprisingly. Yeah. And I decide, I was like, I'm going to call out, I'm going to D up Uncle Drew. You know what I mean? And I played deep. I tried to play defense against Kyrie. And I was like, I held my own for a period of time. Do you know what I mean? Like, to me, an impressive way where I was like, he did not immediately run right past me. And so like, I'll take that as a victory. And then he blew past me and dunked. And I did score on a breakaway, and I could feel Kyrie coming up behind me, and did not swat my layup away.
Oh, that's nice
like,
of him.
I was no, he wanted to. Like I really
you shielded him.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, but I was like on my left side and went up to. I was like, I'm not going up with the left hand. I was like, I am not. You know what I mean? I was like, I wish I could go up with the left, but I'm not going to. And it was the most. But I then had to try to hit like. There's a moment in the movie where I'm supposed to hit a shot. And I was like, oh, it'd be funny if I hit a sky hook and say Vanilla Sky. I pitched that to them. They're like, let's do it. But a sky hook is
hard,
an incredibly hard shot to make. Yeah. I'm only like 2 feet from the basket, but I'm trying to like, and I'm not hitting the sky hook.
Right.
So I go like Vanilla Sky each time over and over. And I finally hit it. And that was like, we broke for lunch. And that was the day that I felt like, I was like, oh, they don't want to eat lunch with me today. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't hit it.
Oh my God.
And I will tell, yeah.
So
the end of the movie, I hope I'm not ruining it for anybody.
No.
Everybody's been waiting. I know Uncle Drew's first on everybody's queue right now.
Yes, right.
Next
now.
Thing
it should be. Spoiler it's alert. Funny. It's
I'll
a great
cover
movie.
My ears.
Yeah. So there's a moment at the end where, you know, like Rel's the good guy and the bad guy. And I block, it's like the whole story is like, as like 12 year olds, I block his shot and it like changes the trajectory of our lives, you know? And he's got a spot up and hit a three. And Reggie Miller's like, oh, it should be, you know what? It would be awesome if it's a step back, you know, which is like a nice thought if you're an NBA player, but if you're like me or Lil Rel, like a step back three, it's not the easiest thing to just
right.
like
no.
Yeah. So he's supposed to pump fake. I'm supposed to jump up, fail the block, and then he steps back and hits a three. And he can't. We do one take. And then it's like 500 extras, everybody watching. everybody watching. Oh. And it was like, let's, even if he doesn't hit it, storm storm the court. Everybody celebrates. So he steps back. He misses the first three. Everyone storms the court. And you have to reset because he did not hit it.
Right.
He doesn't hit the second one. It goes on for a while and he cannot hit the three.
Poor thing. Oh my God.
And you can feel all of the NBA players like advice at one point is like, they're just like, they come up and they're like, hey man, just hit it.
Great coaching. I mean,
there's no
practical advice.
No, it's just like just hit the
use your legs, break. Strain your arms.
Yeah, like, you know what? I just think if you, from your legs a little more,
yeah, exactly.
No, just hit it.
Just fucking hit the shot. I felt terrible for.
Yeah. How many takes? Do you remember?
It was, I don't want to sell Rel out.
Okay.
But it was a lot of takes. Yeah. And,
but he got it. He eventually got it.
He eventually hits it.
Yeah, they just CGI that.
He did bank it in. The bank is open.
He banked it in. I believe it's the take that's in the movie.
That's there's nothing wrong with a bank shot. There's really nothing.
Yeah, you know, a bank three. You know how everyone's
always playing. Called it.
Called it. Maybe. Oh, yes.
That's great.
And then I guess I'll tell this. You guys can tell me whether we should cut this out or not.
Okay.
But now that I've sold out Rel taking so long to three, I'm looking at, so the couple of extras who were like kind of the star extras, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. One of them looked like Tupac and like he had a buddy and they were like because it was like multiple days where we were all there. Nate Robinson stole the mic at one point. There was like a guy, a great guy who was emceeing the entire, he MCs like Rucker Park games, and he's emceeing and he's got a live mic. And so like in between takes was trying to gather everyone together. And Nate Robinson at one point would steal the mic and like play music off his phone and start DJing between takes and was like, and these two guys were like the stars. This one guy looked like Tupac and this other guy. And at one point the other guy starts talking shit to Rel, just being like, come on, man, hit the shot. You know what I mean? And I felt terrible for Rel because it's just like you're in your head. Like the feeling you've never, it's like goes like saying about the Mets apple. It's just like nothing's going to kill a hard on more than just like make
pressure.
It.
Everybody watching.
So at one point these guys are like kind of talking shit and they're just kind of like goofing on Rel. And I'm like, hey, man, he's the star of this movie. Like, why don't you just step back?
Yeah, nice.
And he goes, I could shoot you through him.
Oh.
I was like, okay, cool. Yeah. And they're like, and action. And so then after that take, and in my head, I'm like doing the take the whole time, like, all right, pretend to block the shot and like don't get shot by that guy. And then
think about as an actor.
And the take ends and we both, me and that guy, both go up to each other immediately. And we're like, hey, I'm sorry. He's like, I'm sorry about that. Like, we both kind of like, and I was like, okay, all right, everything's going to be okay. Anyway.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So when you're looking in my eyes, and
there's real fear there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Nick, you've been so generous with your time. And I know, you've talked a lot in other interviews about Big Mouth. We love it. It's a huge smash success. And of course, at Family Guy, when Andrew went to go do that, we're like, oh, isn't that nice? He's going to do this little thing. And like a couple of years later, we're like, all right, easy. Enough. Stop being so successful. Like, all right, that's good. Like every kid I meet and then their parents are like, oh, he writes for Family Guy. And they're like, I watch Big Mouth. I'm like, oh, fuck. But like, it's such a funny show.
Well, but it is, I will say Andrew learned so much. I mean, obviously learned so much about how to do a show from how you guys did it. He was great at it. And he's such a good, like, as you guys know, also like he was working in like the production. So he was like doing all this other stuff. So when he came to, he really learned so much about the entire process of animation from Family Guy that we definitely had. He understood how a show could run smoothly and it was incredibly helpful to us.
Well, that comes across. And Andrew was always someone who, as a writer, even in a Family Guy room, which is quite irreverent and gross, would be on the gross side. And so, like, it's sort of appropriate that he helped create this show, Big Mouth, which is hilarious, gross, irreverent, raunchy. So that's so funny. But I just wanted to ask a question before we go, because I loved and was so fascinated by Don't Worry, Darling. Uh-huh. Like, I know there was a lot of, you know, a lot going on that didn't really have to do with the movie about it. But what was your experience like making that film? Because to me, that movie it held my attention so mm-hmm. well. I was so mm-hmm. invested in what was going on in that movie. Like, what was that experience like for you?
For me, it was great. I mean, it was weird because it was like thick COVID pre-vaccine, November. It was October, November, December, and into the next year of 2020.
Wow.
And we're shooting, you know, and it was the election. It was Trump and Biden. It was just like an incredibly intense. And my wife was pregnant, like six, wow. seven, 8 months pregnant in that Whoa. Period of time. So it was just like, it was, there was this weird intensity to the time. And then it was also like the most fun. It was so, you know, I think Olivia is a really like has a really sure hand and was fun to work with. And she put together an incredible crew of people to work on it. And then I, you know, Florence and Harry, I didn't know and are both the most talented, charming people in the world. So like They're inside amazing. Of COVID where like nobody was seeing anyone, all of a sudden I was just like with them. And right. they and it was so such a beautiful physical world to kind of be in of
totally.
Like late 50s, early 60s, this sort of like, you know, and Olivia was like, I want it to feel like the Rat Pack, like the, you know, the way they, you know what
it
I mean?
Did.
Like, it like the way that people think of the 50s as this like very repressive early 60s, sort of like tight, repressive time. She was like, I want it to like at its best feel like the fun, boozy kind of like time and so that's yeah. what we got to sort of we were doing and so that was fucking fun and cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I loved that and I think I love Harry Styles. Like I just yeah. can't get enough of him. I love his yeah. music. I think he's cool. I think he seems like a really cool guy. So there was yeah. something so interesting about that whole movie and that's really what
it was weird, happen. Yeah, because I was about to have my first child, and he at that point became my very serious boyfriend.
That has not come out yet.
That hasn't come out, but
yeah. it's coming out here.
Everyone was so great and talented and cool. It was just everything. Look, you know, I don't think I'm processing until now, like how surreal it was to be in this like true kind of utopic looking feeling environment. Inside of this movie where there's other stuff happening inside of this actual time when the world felt incredibly unknown and unsafe and dangerous.
Precarious. And yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it, I don't know, somehow it all got poured into the soup and it was just delicious to me. So I loved it.
Jew loves soup. There's your headline.
I love the soup. There wasn't too much salt. It was very interesting. I like the protein in it. Nick, as predicted, you are just a delight. So fun to talk to. You're so funny. You've given us so many laughs over the years. And again, I'll say it again, as grizzled, sort of negative comedy people, your tendency is to not like other people who are successful in this realm, but that does not apply to you. We love
you,
and we appreciate you being here today, Nick.
Well,
thank
you guys have been, I've Jen, as I said, been fans of you guys forever, and so it's a pleasure to come and chat with you.
Thank you so much.
It tickles me that you guys would be like, you know, that you guys wouldn't hate my comedy.
Incomplete awe of you.
That's it. That's the goal, right?
Yeah.
All right, Nick Kroll, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Oh, God. Nick Kroll is such a fucking delight.
Yeah,
he's such a delight. He just tickles.
I'm going to say it. Oh. This was better than the Stutz episode.
Yes. Kroll, you did it. He tickles my funny bone. All right. But now let's get to a portion of our show we like to call Top 5.
Top 5.
Top 5.
Ooh,
yeah, Lisa, jazzy, beautiful. Jazz. All right, JC, this was your topic. Tell us what we're top 5 in today.
Top 5 80s words or phrases.
Yes.
Or, however you'd say that.
Go for
it. Okay, so my number 5, well, in doing this, I realized that the way I speak is totally stuck in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And my number five.
You said it.
I did say it. Mm-hmm. And to follow up with that, my number five is the word totally.
Totally.
I'm totally stuck.
Totally rad.
Totally. My number four is, this is a phrase, I've fallen and I can't get up. We used that in this
Forgot
house.
Forgot about that. That's a good one. Good one.
Number three, stuck in the 80s. I use it a lot. Rad. I use the word rad from radical. I say
you
it a
still
lot.
Do. Wow, that's
I
awesome.
I say all of these a lot. I mean, yes.
Yeah.
Number two, awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's true. Awesome. That's true. I forget that that's 80s, but it is.
Yeah. And then this popped up in the 80s. This is my number one, and I use it way too often. It's very annoying. Like.
The yeah.
Word, like, you know, I'm like, shit. You know, when you're like, you're like,
yeah.
You know, like,
days gonna be overlap.
Oh, yep. Nice.
Go ahead, Gildy.
All right. Well, number five is Bomar. Calling someone a Bomar or a Poindexter.
Oh, that's amazing.
Number four, along the same lines, dingus.
Ooh, that's from dingus. Totally
quit
from
being
me.
A dingus. Number three, I had like. It's
yes,
just
yes.
infected all of our speech.
Yep.
Yep. Number two, I remember when people started saying stuff was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, everything's awesome.
Everything
but the
is
number
awesome.
One, my number one favorite word from the 80s, still use it today, dork.
Wow, I didn't realize that was from the 80s. That's amazing.
Those are good. Good. All right, here's my top five, and they have some that maybe you don't use as much today. We'll
Ooh,
see.
Okay. Controversial.
Number five for me is bite me.
Oh, yes. Yes. Like.
Bite, bite me. Number four, calm down, spaz.
Ooh, spaz. Totally.
Calm yes. down, spaz. And apparently spaz is a word now you can't say as well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because it's disrespectful to the spazzes. Number three is like I give a care.
Oh, ooh, yeah. Wow. I feel like that Peter Griffin said that in a very funny way.
Yeah. I think that's right. I don't give a care.
Yeah.
Number well, two along the same lines is no duh.
No doy.
And number one, and here's one that you don't say anymore for obvious reasons, and I've learned, I've listened. Number one, gay. Oh, and you have to put as many A's in it as possible. That was the 80s way.
Right.
And of course, back then, we didn't mean gay as in homosexual.
Right.
You meant it as in like, that's lame, which is also right. almost worse.
It's
that
terrible.
You conflate that word with lame, but that was the 80s.
Those sort of the 80s equivalent of everyone using Napster and just stealing music. It's like, yeah, I mean, we're just,
well,
you know, who knew? We were just saying the stuff and stealing the music.
Right.
We were all assholes and thieves. It's yes. fine. We'll just pretend like it didn't really happen.
That's what everyone was doing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I thought you guys would have Wicked on there. That's Wicked.
I don't really like it.
I feel like Wicked.
It's very Boston.
I don't know. Was Wicked a little bit before then?
Oh, maybe.
I feel like I remember in that thing you do when they have the music contest, it goes all the way to Wicked. Yes, he goes, it's Wicked. It's Wicked.
Oh, like Wicked Awesome.
Wicked Awesome is
80s. I thought that was very
80s. For sure. For sure. All right. That was fun. So next week, mine, pretty simple. Top five Matt Damon movies.
Ooh.
Top five Matt Damon movies.
He's done a lot.
Nothing to explain there.
Yes.
Awesome. All right, that will be
great
fun.
Category.
And maybe we can quickly get in to the how we end our program each week on a high note. Oh, thank you, Tom and Max.
Yes.
I'll go quickly with my high note. It's a little strange. It's our dog, Dutch. So no particular reason. I just often end up with Dutch for most of the day, tracking her movements. When does she have to go pee? Does she have to go outside? Tall takes the very difficult morning shift with the breakfast, and she comes down to the, you know, the poop and the pee that's wherever it is. And then I'm sort of on duty for most of the rest of the day in terms of tracking on duty. I saw you point at me. Tracking like when she has to go out. But I was taking her out last night, and we've been in a great rhythm lately. Take her out. She goes and pees right away. And I was kind of thinking to myself, she's 15, and how many more times am I going to get to do this? And I was just feeling a little sentimental towards a Dutch.
That's sweet.
I can go.
You go.
Yeah.
So I want to give it up for my wife's side of the family. You know, when you marry into a family, you don't know what you're going to get. But we were visiting her cousins in Colorado, and cousins Dan and Suzanne were so generous with us, putting us up at their beautiful That's home. Nice. And yes. Then her cousins Jenny and Jason made us this great dinner. Nice. Cousin Karen and her boyfriend Craig, we had a super awesome hang. Hope right. I'm not leaving anyone else out.
Craig wasn't the one with the tattoo, right?
No.
Okay, phew, okay. Good. Just checking.
Caden, Kyle, Uncle Tom, the whole gang was awesome. Just super fun to be around. So like I felt very fortunate that I married into like
very such nice a cool of you to family. Say. Very yeah. nice of you to say.
Yeah.
JC, what do you yes. get?
My high note, very simple. Today, Wimbledon, Elina Svitolina, Ukrainian player. Beat the number one player in the world, who's also an amazing player, supporter of Ukraine.
Iga Swiatek.
Yes. And it was a riveting match, and it ended right before we recorded. So I was thrilled. I cried after her last match because I'm just psycho like that. That's a cry over sports. But I'm very excited for her.
That was fun to watch. And I love her love for Harry Styles and hearing how that plays out
really
in her post-match press conferences.
Yes.
And to Harry's credit, he responded to her on the internet and said, I've got tickets for you whenever you want.
Yes.
Those are great high notes. Great show today. Thank you to Nick Kroll. And next week, guys, it's just us. We're going to have to think of some fun stuff to talk about. Just the three of us. Just the three of us. So I want to thank you all for listening. Thank you two for being awesome.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you again next week.
That was fun.
And it stops right now.
Somewhere between a Schneider and a Scully. It's in there somewhere. I don't know.